welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I hope I have a guest today. Paul Craig Roberts is scheduled. I got an email from Paul a short while ago. Some kind of a storm down where he is. It had an effect on communication lines. If Paul calls in, Paul, are we connected by any chance? Well, I guess not at this moment. But if Paul is able to use his line to call in as opposed to PRN using its lines to reach him, then hopefully we can get Paul on. If we don't make it, I'll get Paul back next month. We'll do it again. Mother Nature has final say. You know the way it goes. But in any event, let me go. My studio will alert me if we make contact with Paul, and we'll pick it up with him. Once in a while, something like this happens. The last time was a few weeks ago when I think pretty close to airtime, I learned that my guest was hospitalized unexpectedly. That's an excellent reason for not being able to come on the program. What can you do? Paul, are you on?
Yeah, I called in.
Oh, we made it. We made it. We couldn't reach you, but you could reach us. Anyway, oh, I'm delighted. I just made apologies for you. I told about the storm that hit your area. But anyway, we're connected.
I thought the problem was on yours.
Oh, we just got disconnected. Well, I hope Paul calls right back again. Something awry with the phone lines. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Technology does what technology does. We mortals have nothing to say about that. We go with the flow and we do the best we can. Again, I'll be alerted when Paul gets back on the line again. Again, a disconnect. Hopefully it was just an aberration. I'll get Paul on. But Paul writes about so much that's so important. I write about lots of the same things that he does, and it really is important to get Paul on to have his views expressed on a program like this. Paul is very special because he was a former Under Treasury Secretary during the Reagan administration.
Steven, I'm back.
Paul, we are back. Let's hope that we stay connected. I'm going to let you jump in. I don't think I need to explain to listeners who you are, but I did begin saying that you're important because you're a former insider. You were in the Reagan administration, the Treasury Department, and you've become a severe critic of imperial policy. And that really is a very important message to hear. You're writing about important stuff all the time, Paul. Let me let you jump in on what you'd most like to comment. Now, it's probably a number of things, but let me let you take over.
Oh, you mean you want me to pose the discussion, huh?
Well, I always like to focus on the topics my guests most prefer. So you have a number of recent articles. You want to discuss any one of them or all of them?
Well, not particularly. They're in print. We can talk about other things. Look, you know, we're still told there's a recovery, and yet what we've heard from the National Science Foundation is that of the science and engineering graduates, the most recent information they have, I think it deals with people who got PhD degrees in engineering in 2011. Only 64% have been able to find any kind of employment. And yet we're told that there's a great shortage of science and engineering graduates in the United States, and therefore the corporations have to be given H-1B visas to bring in foreigners. So if there's a great shortage, how come we have 36% of the recent graduating class unable to find jobs? And how come, for example, we see report after report of the large technology firms, you know, Intel, IBM, they bring in foreign workers, they force their employees to train them, and then they dismiss their scarce workers. How are the workers scarce when they're dismissed by the thousands and tens of thousands and replaced with foreigners? And so what do we have right now, despite all this evidence before everybody's eyes? The Republicans in the Congress are sponsoring a bill to increase the number of foreign employees that can be brought into the country under the H-1B work visa. So what's going on? We have here the U.S. Congress in cahoots with the robber barons to leave the educated class in America unemployed and to substitute for them foreign workers who are paid one-third less. Now, all this is going on right before our eyes. It's not even disguised. It's true the corporations lie about the shortage of the workers that they're dismissing constantly every week. But the lies are transparent. And yet we now have these Republican bills to increase the amount of H-1B visas. So this shows, I think, that there's no representation in the U.S. Congress of the American people. They represent foreign interests. They represent corporate interests, the powerful interest groups, but no one else. So how can we be said to be a democracy or to have freedom and democracy or any of these things? It's just all a complete absurdity. It's the most incredible thing that it goes unremarked. The media leaves it alone. The people seem to be, unless it affects them, you know, unless you're one of the laid-off engineers or scientists, the people don't seem to understand what's going on. A large proportion of the last 2 years, college graduates have had to go back home and live with their parents, and nobody seems to catch on. I mean, this is an amazing thing.
Well, it really is shocking, and I'm getting up in years, but my memory is still pretty sound, pretty sharp. And I finished college and graduate school in February, grad school in February 1960. I got a first-rate education for a few thousand dollars. My college degree cost a few thousand dollars. My graduate degree that I took an accelerated course, three semesters and a summer, and maybe that was another couple of thousand dollars. And I had no trouble in early 1960 finding a job. It wasn't the strongest economy at the time. I don't believe America was in recession, but the economy was a little bit on the soft side, as I remember. And literally, I went to work within about 24 hours after I got my degree. I decided I would take one day off, and then I wanted to go to work because I was broke. I had to earn some money, and I reported to work. I forget the day of the week that I got my degree, my graduate degree. But again, one day off, just kind of decompressed a little bit and went to work and never had a problem staying employed until the day I retired in 1999. Such a different world today, Paul. And the kids, to go to college today, it cost a fortune. There were state schools back then you could go to, either dirt cheap or free, good schools. University of Illinois, University of California, other schools. Now they cost a fortune. And if you go to the most expensive schools, there's no way most kids can afford it without getting financial help or some kind of help. And going deeply into debt, there is no way they can get out of, to the extent that their wages, their retirement benefits can be confiscated if they don't pay off their debt. That's the situation today. It certainly wasn't the case when you and I were back in school, Paul.
No, that's exactly right. I remember, I think, the tuition at Georgia Tech, it was on a quarter system. You had to pay three times a year, and I think it was like $150 a quarter.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember in graduate school, you would get like a $2,500 fellowship, and that generally covered the year. And I remember going to Oxford. I had American fellowships to go there, and I think even at Oxford in those days, the tuition was like a couple hundred dollars a term. Of course, today you couldn't go there.
You couldn't do it on a bed. I've said on this program before, Paul. Freshman year, 1952 at Harvard, 4-year tuition, $600. 4-year.
But you see,
I sure didn't need a student loan.
Yeah, you see, then the costs were low and the rewards were high. And now the costs are high and there are no rewards.
Exactly.
If you're not in the top, 10% of your class, you're probably not going to get a job. And because there aren't any. There aren't any jobs for university-educated people. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics payroll jobs show this, and their projections of future jobs over the next 10 years show this. There's literally no employment projected for university-educated people. And yet the cost of getting this degree now is huge, like you say, leaves people in debt for decades. And so when do the people catch on and stop going to the universities? And then what becomes of the universities? Do they close up? Already, I think they rely about one-third or more on foreign students. In the last few years, I've gone to three university graduations, Georgia Tech, Stanford, University of Missouri, and at least one-third of the students were foreign students, perhaps more, particularly at Stanford. And so we seem now to be using universities to educate foreigners, and I suppose some of them stay here on the work visas and others go back. But what becomes of the Americans, and what becomes when they have no future? Are we going to just have universities that specialize in educating foreign students because there's not going to be a U.S. demand for them? Why does anybody want to get these huge debts to pay for a degree that hasn't any prospect?
And you've written, and I have certainly written, citing economist John Williams and how he re-engineers the GDP data and the unemployment data. And by his calculations, unemployment, and listeners to this program know it well, unemployment in America isn't 7, 9, or 8%, whatever they call it. It's 23%. It's 23%, and for many it's long-term, and they simply can't find jobs. And as you say, college graduates that decades ago would have no trouble finding a fairly decent job, they simply can't find anything today, and it's not getting any better, it's getting worse.
Right. Well, if you've got 36% of the recent graduating class of Ph.D. engineers unable to find a job or a postdoctoral or anything, then certainly there's no shortage of science and engineering graduates in the United States. There's just no employment for them. And yet we keep hearing that there's a shortage, and we keep having the government tell us education is the answer, education is the answer. Well, it's not, and there's no statistical evidence that supports this claim, certainly not the Bureau of Labor Statistics job projections or payroll job data. So it's another one of those things where we're lied to when the truth is obvious and the opposite. And it seems like everything we're lied to. The unemployment rate is a lie. The inflation rate is a lie. The gross domestic product is a lie. The weapons of mass destruction is a lie. Iranian nukes is a lie. Everything is a lie. We live in a world that's totally dominated by lies, and the media merely serves to as an echo chamber for the government's lies, and people haven't a clue about anything that's going on around them. Let's talk about GMOs, genetically modified organisms.
Well, that's a subject that interests me. It's been a good while since I've written about them, Paul. I'd say at least a few years. But in my personal life, I make it a point to do everything possible to exclude GMOs from my diet. And the most insidious ones are the ingredients in packaged foods. Nothing is labeled. Nobody knows anything. But the chances are, if you buy a packaged food and it's got a list of ingredients, you're going to get GMOs in there. And the evidence is pretty strong, Paul.
They're
poison.
Stephen, you can't avoid them if you eat bread or soy or corn, or you eat any form of poultry, beef, or pork that's not organic. You can't avoid them because that's the entire soybean, wheat, corn crops now are from genetically modified seeds. And information has come to light from scientists that the effects, see, the main reason for these genetically modified crops is to make them resistant to herbicides, such as Roundup. So they can now go spray the crops with Roundup, and it kills the weeds, but doesn't harm the crops, and so they're spared the expense of having to plow the crops for weeds or other forms of expensive weed control. So they've produced a seed that grows the crop that is resistant to Roundup. Now, what scientists have found is that the ingredients in Roundup, particularly something called glyphosate, has incredible detrimental effects on everything. It destroys micronutrients in the soil, and so the nutritional value of the crop drops by a third or more. It destroys the balance in the soil that contained all kinds of plant diseases. But now these diseases are released, so that what's happened now with these Roundup-ready crops is that they're losing them to diseases. They're a sudden death syndrome, which destroys soybeans. There's goss wilt that destroys corn. There's a take-all small grain disease that wipes out just about everything else. And then it turns out that the animals, the cattle, the pigs, the horses, the poultry that are fed with these products are now having very high rates of infertility, spontaneous abortions. The rates are now running about 35%, so it's making it very difficult for animal farmers to maintain their herds. And now what they have approved, despite the opposition of scientists who wrote to the Secretary of Agriculture, they've now approved GMOs for alfalfa. And alfalfa, of course, is the main feed stock for animals, for cattle particularly. And so the scientists say it's going to have the same effect on alfalfa it has on corn and wheat, and that what they're doing is they're going to make it impossible to have herds, because it's just going to wipe out the fertility of the animals. And they also have premature aging, and a new pathogen has now appeared that they have never seen before. And it's wiping out herds, and there are all kinds of, if you have these big dairy herds, big beef herds, big hog farms, the business has to employ veterinarians, because the concentration is such, and the germ pools are so high, and so on. And so the veterinarians are employed to kind of manage that and keep it all under control. But now this new pathogen has come, and they can't cope with it, and they can't figure out what it is, or nothing works against it. They've sent it off to scientists at Purdue University who've identified it and traced it to this ingredient in Roundup. And so it looks like we're destroying the soil. We're destroying the seed base of the principal grain crops and hay. And this will make it impossible to have beef herds, hog farms, and dairy herds. So, and this was all laid out in scientific terms for the Secretary of Agriculture. The scientists asked, "Would you please?" And this is just recent. This just happened. And they said, "Would you please delay the approval of Roundup Ready alfalfa until we can get more information?" And he said no, and he approved it. And, of course, once it's in use, the pollination spreads it to the non-Roundup Ready, and that becomes the only source of that crop. So we're really facing what some of these scientists say is food Armageddon.
Yeah, it really is true.
And it's all done for the profits of a few firms. And there's no public oversight. the scientists have even said that it's harder and harder to be able to even do studies because Monsanto and Dow, they control the money that fund the studies. And so they buy studies. And to try to get an honest study, there's no money. So this is a situation. I mean, this is a far greater threat than terrorism or Iranian nukes or weapons of mass destruction or any of the other crap that they lied to us around the clock about, and they don't even tell us about this. But if you go online, just research one name, Don Huber, H-U-B-E-R. He's one of the principal scientists at Purdue University, a plant pathologist, a soil microbiologist. He's on top of all this. And there you can find his letter to the Secretary of Agriculture and to Obama and to the EU and the UK commissions. The good thing about this is that someone leaked his letter. I mean, it went on the Internet and went viral. And the EU and the UK commissions asked him about it, and he's written to explain there. And it looks like these crops will have a better chance of being banned in Europe, but certainly not in the United States. The vested interests have dominated over science and facts. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. It's pretty shocking stuff, Paul. I remember an old saying that went, "You are what you eat." It had a little different meaning way back when, and I don't remember who said it. It's a saying I recall from my youth decades ago, but there were no GMOs then. I can remember that my mother used to buy some dairy products, not milk. The milk used to be delivered on a horse-drawn wagon in our neighborhood. I sure remember the manure on the street. We had to maneuver around if we played touch football or something, but that was another story. But there was a farmer who came by and delivered fresh dairy products right from his farm, eggs and cottage cheese and some other things that my mother would buy for him. I'm sure the prices were dirt cheap, and it was good stuff in terms of its purity. It's pretty tough to get that today, and there's no question the GMOs are pure poison, and everybody should do whatever they can to avoid them as much as possible.
Well, you can't avoid them. It's like I say, if you eat bread,
if you eat organic, you'll avoid most of them.
Or meat, because it's all there. Unless you see what this is going to do, it's going to destroy the possibility of having organic meat. Because you assume that these organic herds that they feed on grass, that they at least have to rely on hay in the winter, and yet the hay will be the alfalfa, and it's now will be polluted with glyphosate, and it's a very serious situation, because the instance of high fertility is now also spreading into the humans. They're seeing a rise in infertility in humans. That's like the rise in infertility in the herds. So one doesn't really understand how one has an accountable or responsible government that just sits there and let these things go forward because of the profits and power of the agribusiness. But that's the situation.
Well, you've got agribusiness doing its damage. You've got big oil doing its polluting damage. You got the bankers doing what they do. I mean, it's simply one thing after another, Paul. And ordinary people, so many millions around the world are so terribly harmed. And as you say, there's a silence, a code of silence imposed over the media. They say nothing. They fearmonger. They support imperial wars. They don't tell people about the things that really harm them. They support the worst policies. And most people don't know the difference. That's what bothers me the most.
Exactly. Exactly. So, the real question is, the crises that are real, that we face, are unknown. And we are all misfocused on make-believe crises. that are not real but are used to rip off the taxpayers and the ordinary people. They're going to pay for their banker bailouts and their wars and their homeland security by cutting the social safety net. And they're going to privatize government services in order to shift taxpayer money away from services toward the profits of private firms. And this is under, you know, this is in full-scale operation. This is what's going on. And people just go about as if nothing is happening.
And public interest, and I'm afraid a little bit too much indifference as well, Paul, because people are so concerned with the priorities of their daily life, and it's understandable. They have family, job obligations, very important, but the overall welfare longer term for their families, for their loved ones, for their friends, this stuff matters, and anybody paying half attention has to know there's something terribly wrong going on. Anybody a little up in years can reflect back sometime a few decades ago, pre-9/11, earlier than that. Anybody in our age category, Paul, can look back at much better times than what we're going through now. And America literally has become a police state. Tyranny runs the country. I like to say it's a hair's breadth away from becoming full-blown. I mean, literally anything could happen to really bring the hammer down all the way. Obama exceeds the worst of George Bush. I repeat this stuff all the time, and most people simply don't understand.
Yep, and they're also going to lose their water supply because of fracking.
Fracking is another big issue. I only wrote once about that, but it really is a disgusting technology. Again, polluting the environment another way. How many new ways can they find to do this, Paul, and literally make America and the planet unlivable?
Now, what do you do when you don't have any water? That's the question.
Well, water is not something that you can replace. it even takes water to produce all the soft drinks. They really aren't so good and ought to be stayed away
from.
They're
now finding this glyphosate as well in groundwater, in rain. And, of course, so that's kind of, that's one attack on the water. The runoff from chemical fertilizers is another attack. The runoff from mining is another attack. And now we have the fracking, which attacks it twice because it uses up so much surface water to pump into the ground with these scores and scores of toxins that stays there, infiltrates, gets into the groundwater, destroys the aquifers, destroys the wells. And so, you know, the oil and energy companies will make some money fracking, and the real cost, the external cost, is destruction of the water supply, which, of course, is a far greater cost than the value of the oil and gas that they'll recover. So as long as the corporations can impose their costs externally on the environment and on other people, they can always make money, and that's the way the United States works.
That's the way it works, and there are a lot of ways to wage war, Paul. You can wage political war, financial war, social war, environmental war. Washington uses them all. Paul, any quick last thought, because we are plumb out of time.
Yeah, I think we had a good conversation.
Oh, we really did, and I'm glad we made it. I was a little concerned that the elements might wash us out, but we got it in. Oh, I hope the storm passed and everything is okay. I'll shoot you an email. I look forward to getting you back next month, Paul.
Okay.
Join us again tomorrow. Of course, we're on every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We're on weekends, Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.